You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from Through the Sword and the Step Back. Today, my guest is Mike Zavagno. He is a writer at Through the Sword and the host of the Long Twos podcast, which is part of the Almighty Baller Radio and Podcast Network. Mike, how's it going?
Not too bad, man. How's it going for you?
It's going good. I'm kind of disappointed that the Celtics-Wizards game isn't very good. Because I kind of wanted to see those teams go at it, but Washington's been really bad lately, and I'm kind of the East is kind of that 2-4 race isn't quite as interesting as it was maybe a month ago. That's kind of where I'm at right now in this Monday night as we recorded this.
I feel that. Yeah, I was watching a little bit earlier. I saw it get a little bit chippy when Brandon Jennings got kind of pushed over by our Cleveland guy Terry Rozier. And then after that, the Celtics look to use that to kind of ignite them and turn it on. And they look like they haven't looked back since. And Golden State, Oklahoma City isn't doing us any favors either. So I've settled on Nuggets, Rockets.
I mean, that's the hipster game, I think, out of Monday night's slate. Jokic, Harden, Capella, D'Antoni. I mean, you just got a lot. Jamal Murray, you got a lot in that game. And it's certainly better than the Knicks-Clippers game that apparently is happening at 10:30. But we're here today to talk about something that we talked about on Cavs. If you're a member of Cavs Twitter, you might have seen Mike, myself, and Chops and others discussing this on Sunday night when the Cavs played the Lakers. The Cavs did win that game, but I one of the things I thought was really interesting of that game, and it was sort of predictable based on what the team is, was that their defense didn't look great, and some of the Cavs' defensive numbers to me are sort of interesting. I'm writing a piece about this, so you'll get this in word form as well in the next couple days. But right now, the Cavs' defensive rating, it'll change, the ranking will change if you on Tuesday morning perhaps, but currently they have a defensive rating of 107.5, which is 21st in the league. Their net rating is 3.6, which has pushed them 6th in the league, so their offense, of course, has been incredible. But that defensive rating is the highest defensive rating of any significant stretch since LeBron came back in the 2014-15 season. It's higher than they were at pre-Mozgov. It's higher than they were at last year with Lou when the defense got worse and the offense got better under Lou after Blatt was fired. And the Cavs' defense to me is the biggest concern I think I have about this team. I think health is obviously a concern. I think you have to worry about how guys are going to fit together because they haven't played together yet. Again, J.R. Smith, Kyle Korver, and Amon Shumpert haven't even played a game together yet. But I think defense is the biggest concern. Before we get into this more, Mike, where does the Cavs' defense, just as a broad concept, rank as your concern with this team? Where does that fall on your scale?
Well, in terms of my concern level regarding the Cavs defense, I don't, it's hard for me because I don't think that it's as much of an issue in, say, like the first or second round of the Eastern Conference playoffs. I think that the offense can probably overpower teams as we start the playoffs, but I think it definitely is a larger concern as you start to look towards, you know, whether or not they're going to actually win the championship this year. So maybe not a concern in the shorter term, but in terms of the whole thing, I think that it's definitely something that we have to be paying attention to.
Yeah, I think that's the big thing, right? Like, right now, it doesn't matter quite that much. I think the Cavs are probably still going to get the number one seed. They're probably still going to smoke teams in the first round, the second round, maybe even the Eastern Conference Finals. But if they're going to play the Warriors, if they're going to play the Spurs in the Finals, I think they're going to need a really good defense. Some of the numbers, to me, are just interesting because it isn't necessarily that they're overall bad, but they're bad in one particular area. And, Mike, I'm going to let you explain this because you're the one who pointed this out to me.
Sure. So the Cavs are actually 8th in half-court defense. Per synergy, they're giving up about 92.8 points per 100 possessions in the half-court. The Warriors lead in that stat at about 89 points per 100 possessions in the half-court. And then if you want to get to league-worst half-court defense, that would be the Nuggets at 98.8. So the Cavs are above average in that. But as you can tell, teams score a lot less frequently in the half court than they do in transition, where the Cavs are the worst transition defense in the NBA, dead last, 30th, whatever you want to call it. They give up 1.18 transition points per 100 possessions, or per possession. That's 118 points per 100 possessions. And the frequency isn't great either. They're giving up transition looks 15% of the time. So they're really not controlling the frequency with which teams are getting out in transition, or how well teams are actually performing in transition right now. So they're kind of bad in both ways.
Yeah, the half court to me, they look fine a lot of the time, but I can sort of chalk up those issues a lot of the time to some of the personnel. I think missing JR hurts. I think Kyrie's effort hurts. I kept watching this play from Sunday's game, and you know, a back to back in LA is not necessarily the best way to evaluate a guy in the middle of a regular season. But there's this play where he's defending. It's him and Kevin Love defending a D'Angelo Russell and Julius Randle pick and roll. And you basically just see Kyrie take a really bad angle and just die, and Russell gets a clean shot, and Kyrie flails and fouls him. Like, that happens more than I think we would like. There's another one that friend of the pod, Jordan Zerm, he tweeted out this clip of Channing Frye and I think Kyrie defending a pick and roll, and Channing Frye didn't even move, and Kyrie just kind of died. So, like, this stuff happens a lot with this team, and I think we can chalk up some of those issues to that. The transition defense, to me, is just the really jarring one, because it just doesn't feel like they're certainly, I think, going to be better in the postseason. Every year, the Cavs, if you look at the defensive, by defensive rating, they've gotten a little bit better in the playoffs when it has mattered. It's not necessarily these big jumps, but they've gotten better by about like 2 points every year, which isn't insignificant. That to me is something you have to watch as a whole. But the transition defensive, they're going to be that bad. There are teams that can take advantage of that, chief among them being the Golden State Warriors. So, Mike, what do you attribute the Cavs' defensive issues in transition to? I think it could be maybe four or five different things, probably a combination of them.
Yeah, this team last year, too, just to note, in the playoffs, they were actually the best transition defense. So that obviously helped propel them to actually winning the championship. But when I look at the film this year, I think that the biggest thing for the Cavs isn't actually just being there. I know that a lot of people complain about the lack of effort that we see sometimes, but a lot of times the Cavs actually are back in what we would consider transition situations, whether that's like, you know, half transition or the full on like 2-on-1 break. But too many times, I think it's just really a lack of communication. And I don't know if that stems from a bunch of different guys, a bunch of different lineups, guys in and out of the lineup. But a lot of times, almost every Cavs player will either do one of two things. Either they all just kind of run back to the paint and they just stand in the paint together, and then guys will end up getting wide open on the wings. Or they'll just go to whoever they've been guarding that entire game, and then some other guy will, you know, cut down the lane or something, and no one will be guarding him because his man won't be back. And suddenly there's just these lack of communication issues that I think are really the actual cause of the Cavs' transition woes, as opposed to a lot of people who just say, oh, they just don't run back, which I think is the case a lot less than we might realize.
Yeah, I think that's certainly a big thing. And I think, too, we can't really – I don't know if we can understate it. The fact that the Cavs have added a lot of new pieces and they haven't had all of everyone healthy at the same time. And this weekend was an encapsulation of all the weird, wonky things that have happened. You had Tristan Thompson leave the game with that weird tooth injury. You had the three stars sitting on Saturday. Kyle Korver's return has been delayed. You have these weird issues that are keeping the team from playing all together at once, and I think that certainly matters. And I do think it's an effort thing too, right? Like in the playoffs, in the finals in particular, you're going to see a different LeBron James. You're going to see a different Kyrie Irving. I mean, I think you can just look at the film from when Kyrie is playing in a random regular season game against an average team versus how he played defense in the finals last year, right? Like you saw him play defense in a different way on Steph Curry and chase him around more than he would have if it was, you know, a game against Kemba Walker. No slight to Kemba Walker, but if it's in like a February game, like, he's going to be different. LeBron James is going to do so much more defending Draymond Green, defending Kevin Durant in the playoffs and in the finals as opposed to in the regular season. I think the effort thing is a real thing with the Cavs, and I think they are sort of in chill mode in a lot of ways.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at that Lakers game as chief among basically that entire mentality. They didn't play for what, three and a half quarters. They turned
the only time that team played defense in that whole game was the first like 10 minutes of the fourth quarter. Yeah, they were awful the first three quarters. They turned it up, and then I think the stat was, per the Cavs broadcast, pointed this out to me. You had the Lakers scored, I think, 16 points in the first 10 minutes of that quarter, and then they scored 12 in the final two when the game was already over.
And they ended up with an 112 defensive rating in that fourth quarter, so it's not as if it, you know, ended up looking locked down.
Right.
It's just like, you know, sometimes they turn on the offense and it just overwhelms teams. And, you know, sometimes the defense is there. I think that Detroit game that they played, last week now, that game was definitely an example of the Cavs seeing an opponent that had beat them before, that they know that they're way better than, and they really just turned it on defense. And I think that's the type of effort that you'll see in a playoff atmosphere. But like you said, there's been so many changes in the lineup. I have a piece coming out about Tristan Thompson, hopefully tomorrow as well. And, you know, I think he's been really asked to do too much when Kevin Love was out. And I think it's really overextending him, and hopefully getting Kevin Love back to play alongside him will help him kind of fall back into the role that he's been accustomed to, where he's protecting the rim. He's able to be a little bit more of a free safety, switch out onto guys, that kind of thing. I think that Iman Shumpert is eternally overrated as a defender, and JR coming back as well as Korver, you'll probably see Iman Shumpert's minutes cut pretty significantly, and I think that will also help the defense. And then, you know, you end up using a guy maybe like Channing Frye in a little bit more of a strategic role, as opposed to, you know, getting larger minutes, because he's going to be able to help you on offense against a lot of teams, but also, you know, he's not the fastest of foot at this age, and so he's not going to be able to do it for you in the pick and roll, you know, 50 times a night. So I think that those personnel changes like you're talking about are something that's definitely going to hopefully make the defense look better. You know, hopefully the personnel comes together in that way, and we don't continue to have these setbacks that prevent the team from really playing together before the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I think a big thing would be getting 15, 20 games of getting every – well, I don't even know how many games are left, actually. But just getting as many games as you can, not including the – I mean, regular season and first round, too. I mean, I think, like, if they get the Pistons or if they get the Heat, I think those are pretty significantly easier first-round series for the Cavs. Milwaukee would be tougher just because of Giannis. You know, like, yeah. I think that's a tougher series just because of Giannis. But if you get – the Pistons, if you get the Heat, if the Bulls somehow, you know, fall back into the eighth seed, those are easier series, I think, for you to get your bearings back, right? Like, you're not having to deal with some overwhelming offensive force in those games. I think you would see a lot of different guys, you know, playing really well and doing their normal stuff. The Tristan thing to me is really interesting because this is semi-related to the defense topic, but I keep coming back to, what is the Cavs' best defensive lineup? I almost think it's a smaller lineup with him at the five. You certainly lose offensive stretchability there. You certainly lose some things there, but I think the best five defensively might end up being Kyrie. I mean, you're playing Kyrie, so he's going to be on the floor when it matters. Like, and I think that just has to be clear. I think then J.R. Smith, because Tyronn Lue talks about him as the team's best defensive wing. And I think that's true. And then I think you have the LeBron-RJ combo at the 3-4. And then I think Tristan at the 5 is maybe the team's best, most switchable defensive lineup. I do think Love and Tristan with RJ getting out of the game is also pretty serviceable. But it has to be – I think it's best used against a two-big lineup, or if the Warriors are playing Zaza or playing JaVale, that's more playable. But I also think if they're playing JaVale in a possible final series, Kevin Love at the 5 makes sense too, and you can get away with that for sure.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for me because I keep thinking about this in this push and pull sense of, how does it make sense to maximize the team, whether that means maximizing the offense, maximizing the defense, because the ball and the lane and everything, it just moves so much better when Tristan Thompson is on the bench right now. And that's a weird thing to say because I know he's been good, but the lane is so much more open, and the Cavs are getting so much better quality shots, and they're moving the ball because they have five guys spaced around the perimeter. It's dragging opposing centers out. They're forced to guard him. And, you know, whether that's Channing Frye, whether that's LeBron at center, whether that's Kevin Love now. And I feel like that offensive lineup is able to overwhelm people. But then, as you say, you go to the defensive end, and it's a question of whether or not you're going to get lobbed to death, out-rebounded to death, that kind of thing. And so it really is a question that Tyronn Lue is going to have to answer going forward, is exactly how he wants to put this together, and what configurations he thinks are ultimately going to be successful in the playoffs. And obviously that will be opponent driven, but it's going to be interesting to see, and hopefully he has the ability to kind of tinker around with it a little bit down the stretch, because as you say, you know, these three guys, Shumpert, JR, Korver, haven't even played together, all that kind of stuff. You know, there's still a lot of moving pieces that need to be put into place.
Yeah, I think that's kind of where I come back to this too, is that the Cavs have not been healthy for most of the year. They haven't had their best guys for most of the year, and they haven't had the time to acclimate everybody else. Like, I don't really know. I mean, they haven't really played the guys that are going to be playoff rotation guys really together, and like that's a lot because no one's been healthy at the same time. But you haven't seen them kind of maybe necessarily utilize the LeBron plus bench unit in the way they'd like to, because I think that's probably going to be something like RJ, LeBron, Frye, Korver, and Deron Williams, or Deron Williams. I think that's what that lineup probably looks like. I think you have to, you know, Lou talked about recently wanting to play Korver and J.R. Smith together at the end of games. I don't necessarily love that idea. I think it's a really good offensive idea, but we haven't seen that either. And you want to have those guys get reps, and that matters on offense as well. And I think the Cavs are always going to be more of an offensive team than a defensive team, but they need to have those reps on defense as well. And that, to me, it's sort of problematic to me that we haven't seen them just at least get the reps, because I do think they're going to turn things up. And how much they can turn it up, I guess, is the ultimate question, right? Like, how much faith do you have in a team that, like you pointed out, is currently 30th in transition defense, is currently in the bottom third of the league in defensive rating, but has this really good offense? Like, can they turn the defense up enough to get to a level where it's good enough where the offense, without giving up too much on the offensive end? Like, when you're pushing more, are you getting enough on both ends to be your best self? I think that's my question. And I think last year would make you think that that's totally possible.
Yeah, I think that it's totally possible as well. I mean, I think that once the playoffs roll around, and as long as the continuity is there, you do have guys who have the capability to be good defenders. I think that people have been tossing around the stat that, you know, the only three teams to win the title who didn't rank in the top 10 in defensive rating since 1980 were all defending champions. And so you get kind of this malaise, and you know, whether or not it's the right thing or the best thing for the team, it's clear that the Cavs are not giving 100% effort every night. And, you know, you can say that about most teams, but the Cavs do have the talent to overwhelm a lot of teams in this league right now. And so once we get into the playoffs, I think that, you know, guys like LeBron, even Tristan, Kyrie, really do have another gear on the defensive end. And that's something that I think that we will see this year before it's all said and done.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think the one thing that I'm kind of intrigued by is how these other teams that the Cavs are going to be going against compare. I don't necessarily think any of the teams in the East are going to are much better defensively when it matters. Boston, to me, of course, has the tools, but I don't know. They're going to max themselves out. The interesting thing to the two teams that stand out to me, per the synergy stats that you sent over, Golden State is first in half court and third in transition defense. San Antonio is second in the half court and 10th in transition. The Cavs are, of course, nowhere near there. And those teams are playing in different style. They have different pieces. They've have different versatility. And both those teams, I mean, the Warriors have had Kevin Durant defending the rim and Draymond Green, who I think has been the defensive player of the year. The Spurs have Kawhi. Like, they have these very, very good defensive players, and the Cavs have good defensive players, but they're not doing the same thing. And I do think the Cavs do, in a sense, miss that rim protection. I don't think that's really they need a Mozgov, but I think they miss a guy who can go in there and maybe just take up minutes in the paint a little bit, because Channing Frye is the opposite of that. And I think they're set up to be so good offensively with Channing. I mean, even Channing Frye has played really well lately, but I think player-wise, it seems to me that they are giving up just something compared to the other good teams in the league.
Yeah, I think that you saw LeBron kind of morph into that rim protector for a bit of last year's finals. And if he's playing the four and if he's guarding Draymond in the finals, I think that that's something that you do ask of him, is to kind of be that guy who's flying around, playing free safety, that kind of thing. And so, I mean, so much of this team obviously depends on LeBron and what gear he can take it to. And so he does rank in the 82nd percentile right now on defense in per synergy this year. And I think that does adequately capture how he's played on the ball. I think he's had a pretty solid on the ball defensive year. I think that off the ball is where he kind of gets lazy or lost sometimes during the regular season. But I think that he's shown that he can still, you know, guard you if you're one-on-one across from him. He has the ability to lock guys down still. And so if you see him become more engaged in that free safety type of role in the playoffs, I think that's where he really becomes that guy who's flying around on that end.
Yeah, there's just, when you said you, all I could think of, yeah, there's a 0% chance I would ever score on LeBron James. there's like a 0% chance. Like, LeBron could be like not even squatting down and I'm screwed. Like, there's just no way. There's just no way.
Yeah, I don't think you would be able to, like, you would check the ball to him, he would check it back to you, and he'd just slap it out of your hands.
Yeah,
and
I'd be done.
Say you'd walk on the floor.
Yeah, even if I was, like, you know, I'd worked out for, like, six months hard, and that's all I did, and, like, you know, developed, like, one good crossover, like, I'd still be screwed. The free safety thing to me with LeBron is interesting, because I think it's what Durant has done in OKC, or in Golden State. And it's not going to be quite the same because Durant is, you know, 7 feet and all this stuff. But I think it makes sense for LeBron in certain matchups. I think it's harder if they're playing Golden State because he's going to have to spend a lot of time tracking Durant. And it's harder to leave Kevin freaking Durant open on the perimeter. But if it's against Boston, you can leave Jake Crowder. If it's against, you know, Washington, you can leave Otto Porter, you know, and like teams are you can do different things with those guys. And I think too, having Richard Jefferson is a good pairing for him too, because Jefferson can switch onto those other guys when you need him to. I think they are set up to do those type of things, like you said, when it really matters, because it's, and that's, you know, 2 months from now.
Yeah, I mean, Richard Jefferson, he ranks in the 81st percentile this year on synergy. I think he obviously is athletic enough. I wouldn't be surprised to see him on Durant a lot if it came to that, and LeBron on Draymond, and then kind of let LeBron move around, especially with how poorly Draymond has shot the ball this year. Something interesting, too, these stats, it's been a small sample size, obviously, but Deron Williams actually ranks in the 91st percentile on defense so far since he came to the Cavs, so interesting to see how he develops. On the flip side of that, Kyle Korver ranks in the 3rd percentile, so that's not very good. But with Deron Williams, I actually think that he, you know, is able to guard slower guys pretty well. He can get chest to chest with people. I think he does a good job of using his strength. He might be a good Sean Livingston counter. Obviously, he doesn't have the size. I know that we really haven't had anyone who has the size, but if you can kind of push Livingston off of that mid-post area with your strength, you might do a better job than a guy like Delly or Kyrie did last year when he basically just got position and rose up over them.
Yeah, I think that's pretty interesting. I think that's a pretty interesting, idea. And the Deron Williams thing, and the not so much the Derek Williams thing, but the Deron Williams and Kyle Korver thing to me seem really interesting, because both of them I think are solid defenders, but they're not, you know, lockdown defenders. But I think they're both going to play big roles in the playoffs, and I think that's going to be interesting to see who they defend in different series. Because I don't think you can really play Deron and Kyrie together when in like a series against the Warriors. I think you maybe could do it against San Antonio, though. I mean, I'm not sure how much you want to do that anyway, though, because you're going to have a bunch of minutes to split up at the two. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what Lou does, and we just don't know yet, right? Like, I think that's sort of the main thing here, is we just don't know what this team's rotations are going to look like in the playoffs, what who's going to be paired with who, if they're going to try Larry Sanders, I guess, if they're going to go small. Like, there's just these weird questions. It's hard to project what they're going to be for me when we just don't really know what to expect yet.
Yeah, like I said before, I think Ty Lue has a lot of work to do between, you know, game 59 and game 82 and even game, you know, 85 or 86. I mean, he's got a lot of talent on this team, obviously a lot of guys who can play, and figuring out who should play when, with who, and against who is going to be a pretty, you know, interesting task to see how he moves forward. I mean, I know personally what I would do, and I would think that I would personally put Amon Shumpert and Derek Williams on the bench and wouldn't hear much of them from, you know, much from them in the playoffs, just because I think that both of those guys are not good enough on the offensive end to be taken seriously in the playoffs. I think that crowds the lane, especially if you're playing them with a guy like Tristan Thompson. You really lose a ton of spacing, in my opinion, against a playoff defense like that. And so I would go with the starters, with JR in there. And then you, like you mentioned, that same second lineup with that Deron Williams, Korver, LeBron, RJ, and Channing, and just, you know, use that 3 or 4 minutes in the start of the second quarter to kind of shoot the lights out and see what happens there. And then if Channing's giving you something, you can ride him a little bit. And if he's not, you just kind of sit him and you tinker around with Love at the five, Tristan at the five, LeBron, RJ at the four, that kind of, you know, whatever you want to put it together with that lineup. But I really think that those are your 10 guys in your rotation. And, you know, if you want to cut it down a little bit as the rounds go on, but those would be the 10 guys I would primarily have on the floor in the playoffs.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Let's wrap it up on this. I think there are certain guys that are going to have to be better. I think LeBron is the obvious guy who I think is going to have to just play with more effort, and I would expect him to do so. But when you look at this team in particular, you look at who they're going to need to be good on defense for them to win another title, whether they play Golden State or they play San Antonio or, you know, get a really tough series of Eastern Conference Finals, who do you has to be the guy or the few guys that has to take it up to another level for this to work?
J.R. Smith, number one. I mean, I think above all things, J.R. Smith has to be the wing defender. He has to be the guy guarding the other team's best guard, because Kyrie is not that guy. We know Kyrie can play better defense, but he's still never going to be the guy guarding Isaiah Thomas or John Wall, you know, or Kyle Lowry, whoever you're going to see. And so JR, I think he needs to get back to being that guy, you know, as he gets healthier, as he gets back in shape. He's number one for me. I think number two is Tristan Thompson. I think Tristan Thompson has to be that rim protector. Until January 31st, he ranked ninth in the league in terms of defending shots at the rim. Since February 1st, he ranks 48th in the league at defending shots at the rim. That's a vast difference. I think he needs to get back to being that 10th in the league guy in the playoffs. And I think third, most important for me, I know that Kyrie should be in there for some. Most important for me, I think, is actually Richard Jefferson. I think that Richard Jefferson allows LeBron to do a lot of different things on the defensive end if he's playing good defense. And so if Richard Jefferson continues to find that fountain of youth, he can guard threes, LeBron can guard fours. It kind of creates that Shane Battier-type relationship that LeBron had in Miami. And so those would be my three guys, J.R. Smith 1, Tristan 2, and Richard Jefferson 3.
Yeah, my thing is going to – I think everything you said is correct. I'm just going to talk about Kyrie. We've talked about how he gets better on defense. We've talked about how he's going to put in more effort. We've seen him put in more effort in games this year when they've been really competitive games. But I think no matter who the Cavs play, he is going to face interesting challenges. If they end up playing the Raptors at some point, you can't really hide him as easily because you have to use your JR on DeRozan, so he's going to have to defend Lowry. And if Lowry is healthy, that's really tough for Kyrie. If they're playing the Celtics, they're going to play a bunch of useful guards, and he's going to have to do some good off-ball work on Avery Bradley and on Marcus Smart. If they're playing Washington, you know, if he's getting Bradley Beal, like that's a kind of a tough draw too, because Bradley Beal is really, really good. And I think, you know, probably should have been an All-Star this year. You know, he didn't get picked at the end, but he was that caliber of player this season. You get to the finals, he's going to defend Klay. I mean, he's going to have to defend Klay. He's going to have to defend Curry at times, too. I think the Cavs had him defend Curry last year, if I'm not mistaken, for most of that series. And if they play the Spurs, I mean, you're going to have to contain Patty Mills. You're going to have to contain Tony Parker off the dribble. You're going to have to probably spend some time maybe defending Danny Green off ball. I think those are really tough challenges for Kyrie Irving. And I think him just playing with effort – And I think him just doing a little bit of work and just making sure he's getting around screens the right way and putting in the effort and just making things hard for his other guy, that is all you really need him to do. Because I think Tristan, I think LeBron, I think RJ, I think JR, they're going to play at a level in theory that's going to be enough where if Kyrie is just playing with effort, it's just going to make the Cavs defense better. And if it just makes life harder for opposing guards to score when they're being guarded by Kyrie, I think that's a win. Because, I mean, Kyrie's not going to transform into this lockdown guard, point guard defender overnight. But if he is just serviceable, I think that's a huge win for the Cavs' defense. Because I do really think a lot of the issues with their defense comes when he is just really, really bad at containing a pick and roll.
Yeah.
He's just as fast. He just fascinates me in so many ways with his defense. Because sometimes I'm like, oh, like he's getting it. And then, you know, we have the Lakers game on Sunday where he's just like, oh, like I'm not here for this, you know. And D'Angelo Russell just torches him in the pick and roll. Like he's a very fascinating guy for me in that sense.
For sure, yeah. No, I think all the points that you make are cogent in terms of what you look for from Kyrie going forward. And like you said, there's a lot of good guards in this conference, and it's important that he, you know, bring it to the next level in the playoffs.
I'm actually going to wrap this up on one thing that just kind of happened before we let you out here, Mike. I'm sure you haven't read the story yet, but there was this Ramona Shelburne just reported that Adam Silver sent a memo to owners saying that, quote, there is a significant issue for the league in terms of resting stars. He informed teams that it will be a big topic for them in the upcoming league meetings, and there's going to be some significant penalties if they don't provide adequate notice for rest. What do you just make of player rest as kind of a thing where the Cavs, of course, are one of the teams that are resting guys?
Yeah, I mean, I think that the league should not be blaming the teams for what is a league problem, in my opinion. I think that the way that the schedule is backloaded, when you have over 70% of did not play rests coming in March or later, that runs into a direct problem right there. And I think that the league having a schedule that has back-to-backs on national TV is just not something that, you know, they should be doing when we've learned so much and we've come so far in terms of science, technology, recovery, rest, all those things. And so the league blaming the teams for doing what's best for the teams doesn't really make sense to me. And I think that the league needs to address this in the offseason by doing a little, you know, better job in terms of whether it's just national TV games or something like that, you know, not having these marquee games be part of back-to-backs. And I know that it's difficult. I know that fans are very upset, whether it's because they bought a ticket, they wanted to watch, you know, people aren't watching on TV, so then sponsors, advertisers, they get upset. And so I understand why the league is upset about this, but I really do think that it's hard to blame the teams when they're looking out for themselves. And I think that ultimately the league should be looking inward to make the schedule, you know, more cohesive and more clear for making sure that if they're going to, you know, pump these Saturday night games, that they're going to be games that aren't a part of huge road trips or back-to-backs or things like that.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree with you everything you just said, and I think too, if you're gonna push that winning a title is the big thing, and you're not gonna give guys the adequate, you know, back to like not have as many back to backs and not have back to backs where they're gonna be playing on national TV or have back to backs where you're setting them up to have to, you know, really kind of choose to between rest or not playing in front of fans, because I do sympathize for those fans. Like I felt really bad for Grizzlies fans early in the year when the Cavs didn't even send their guys. I felt bad for people in LA that didn't get to see them on Saturday, because I'm sure those tickets are really expensive and it's not nearly as fun to watch, you know, like DeAndre Liggins and stuff in that game. Like it's just, you want to see LeBron James. So I get that. And that's frustrating. But if you're going to ask a team to pick between resting their guys in the way they think is best for their team, and getting, and especially when there are injuries on the team, and getting them ready for the finals versus them valuing this regular season game that might not matter that much, teams shouldn't have pick resting for the finals and maximizing their season and their title chances every time. Like, I think that's the right choice.
And I know that they're adding a week to the schedule next year, but they're also adding that week at the beginning of the season. And the way that the schedule is currently structured, it's clearly backloaded to avoid the NFL. So they put all of their marquee games at the end of the year, so they're not competing with the NFL, and then this is what happens. So I don't think that adding a week to the beginning of the season is going to address the problem unless you're somehow also changing the way that you compose the schedule. I would rather see weeks added to a week added to the end of the year. And even then, that kind of separates the NBA playoffs from the NCAA tournament a little bit too. And I think that that would be a good buffer. So I don't know. I mean, it's definitely a complicated issue and there are definitely arguments to be made on both sides, but I really do think that it's something that the league should not be blaming the teams for looking out for their own best interests.
Yeah, I agree. And especially because sometimes you're going to have to deal with injuries. You are going to have minutes restrictions, and teams should value if your incentive is to win a title, and yes, this is entertainment and stuff, but you have to value your team's title chances and your team's health, I think, above everything else. And I think I would be saying that if this was the Spurs, if this was the Warriors, if this was the Rockets, if this was the Wizards, you have to, I think, be very cognizant of your team's rest. I really subscribe to everything that Tom Haberstroh at ESPN has written in the last like 2 years on this. He has so many interesting articles about rest and the impact back-to-backs have. Baxter Holmes has something similar as well that they wrote in their season preview. I'm pretty adamant of like the rest and maximizing guys is the most important thing. But Mike, thank you so much for coming on. Just tell people where they can find you on Twitter and anything else you want to tease aside from that Tristan piece that will probably already be up as people listen to this podcast.
Thanks to you. Yeah. No, appreciate you having me on. You can follow me at mzavagno11 on Twitter. Continue looking for stuff on Fear the Sword, and hopefully I will be a little less busy in law school and be able to get No Long Twos back up and running. So we'll see where that goes. But No Long Twos is indeed in the iTunes store, so you can subscribe to that as well.
Yeah, go give that a 5-star rating. Give the Lockdown Cavs pod a 5-star rating as well while you're there. And Lockdown Cavs will be back tomorrow. We'll be previewing Cavs Nuggets, which will likely, or at least maybe, will be Kyle Korver's return after a 7-game absence, with Adam Mares, the host of Locked On Nuggets and the site manager over at Denver Stiffs, SB Nation's Denver Nuggets community. So
today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/BOOM. BOOM.
For Chris, for Mike, it's been Locked On Cavs. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our 4-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99. And our 2-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.